20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. You know Justice Mosqueda. You can find him on social media at J-U-M-O-S-Q, acmepackingcompany.com. Must read material every single freaking day. Justice, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. Got the big win over the Chicago Bears. I really enjoyed that. Mixed reactions from Bears fans. Have you seen that?
I have seen some. There's a lot of cope. There's a lot of already built up, confidence for the next game in Chicago. Oh, yeah.
Wait until Thanksgiving. We've heard it already. Yep.
Yes. And then there's the next one of the other side where, like, you know, Big Cat from Barstool afterwards, just like, this is how it's going to be forever. The Packers are always going to beat the Bears. There's nothing I can do about it. And it is what it is. And that it's just so, yes, there's a little bit of all of it.
Yeah. I don't know why Bears fans came out of that game confident. I don't think I've ever seen an incompletion ruled when a ball has never hit the ground before. That's a new one to me. I think we got some bad breaks in that game. I feel much more confident if you run it back, we're going to be even better. But that's just me. So
I'm 1,000,000% with you. And this is like, obviously we're Packers fans, but I like to think you and I are pretty balanced and realistic with stuff. I came out of that game feeling really good that Green Bay was just the better team than Chicago. It felt like Ben Johnson had to kind of handhold Caleb Williams through a decent amount of that game with all the play action and bootlegs. It was a good design, and I thought he executed it well for the most part up until that final play. But I thought as well that the calls sort of went more in Chicago's favor. I still haven't seen an angle that would lead me to believe that Luke Musgrave dropped that pass. The incompletion call is certainly an interesting one. There's certainly some holding calls on both sides that probably could have been called. But yeah, I felt much better about Green Bay after that game than vice versa.
Yeah. The only thing that really I'm worried about is those defensive tackles, right? And just the team can't really get off the field. The way it works, so we could talk about the defensive tackle rotation out the front, right? Yep. The way their defensive tackle rotation is working right now, it's Kobe Wynn starting at nose tackle, Carl Brooks starting at three technique, and then really it's Warren Brinson being the backup at both positions right now, and then also playing a lot of like the cheetah snaps as the lone defensive tackle out there just to give the other guys a rest. Jordan Riley is actually being used situationally. The Packers did not do that with Nasir Stackhouse. If you go look up Jordan Riley's snaps, it's all short yardage or like basically near the goal line snaps. So that's really interesting to me that they're actually using him in a situational role in the way that they didn't use Stackhouse. I think the Stackhouse thing is – like, obviously, we talked about this last week. They added two nose tackles, and they lost an under tackle. So it was kind of an odd addition, but it seemed like they wanted to get better there specifically. I don't know. Like, I doubt they're going to cut him, right? Like, they're going to find a way to keep him on the 53-man roster and stuff like that. But it is going to be interesting to see if they hold on to both of those defensive tackles down the stretch or – you know, Bohanna has definitely played more NFL snaps than Riley, but he was here for, what, two fewer days or whatever this past week. So maybe with an extra week of rest, like, or an extra week of preparation, like, maybe it's Bohanna who's up instead of Riley in this game. But Riley's going to be on the roster for the next 3 weeks. So
I'm less confident than you are that they don't cut Stackhouse. I think that they would probably prefer that. I'm just intrigued. I wouldn't say it's I wouldn't say I'm leaning towards it, but I'm intrigued. I wonder the sort of timeline that I would run through with this is they realized they needed another defensive tackle. They picked up Riley. We talked about it. You're required to basically keep him for 3 weeks. And then Bohanna got waived and they're like, oh, we would much prefer Bohanna, but we can't get off of Riley now. So we'll pick up, we have the extra roster spot for now. Anyway, at least by releasing Malik Heath, basically. We have the roster spot now. We'll pick up Ohana, and then we'll just figure out the rest later. What that next step is, if somebody gets hurt or if they have to cut somebody else, I'm just intrigued. But I still think Stackhouse would be in the conversation, especially if they like Bohanna more than Riley, which I would think that they would based on his experience. And Riley already in his very first week was playing ahead of Stackhouse after Stackhouse has been here all year. I'm a little less convinced that maybe Stackhouse isn't totally safe.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I'm not fully sold either way. By the way, I would like to hang the banner, Andy. We talked about this all summer, and I was like, man, this roster pitch is going to get really weird. People want to keep all these wide receivers. They want to keep all the defensive tackles. Someone's going to have to play special teams. And now we get down the stretch of the season, and this year Stackhouse is a healthy scratch. Malik Heath ends up getting cut. Mecole Hardman never made this team.
Yep.
And meanwhile, Christian Welch and Aaron Mosby are on the team. So we got here eventually. The team just likes farting around in the beginning of the season. I will say the Christian Welch injury, so he's in practice today. He's probably going to be listed as limited because he had the concussion, right? But that will be an interesting situation because the Packers can't go into the game with four linebackers. You're just not going to be able to do it. So they're probably – if Welch isn't fully cleared – by Friday, you're probably going to have Jamon Johnson called up. He got called up for the Lions game and actually played special teams, and that's where he'll end up helping.
Yeah. Usually, it's not always this way, but usually if you're practicing right away on that first day, on Wednesday, usually there's a good sign that you're going to get
activated. Questions are funky, though.
Yeah, they're weird. Yeah. Yeah, you never know. Never quite know. I wanted to go back. Let's go here. We obviously started with a defensive tackle. What other key takeaways did you have from that Packers Bears game?
Micah Parsons played 10 snaps as that like stand up defensive tackle type of guy. You could watch a cut up reel of what Caleb Williams' pass attempts look like. It's a whole lot of rolling to the right, rolling to the right, rolling to the right, rolling to the right. I think the second time around they should play Micah at left end, because if he's playing at left end, like if Caleb's going to be running around, I want him running right into Micah Parsons. Because there was that one time they basically ran into each other on the sideline, like sized each other up. Caleb was like, oh, I can't really like run around you the same way I can run around
anybody else.
Harry. Yeah. He ends up bailing backwards and just like throwing it out of bounds. I'd like a whole lot more of that than Gary losing the edge, because like Gary's legs just he can't handle it right now. It'll help definitely. I mean, LVN's back in practice, right? It would help definitely if LVN can play some of those defensive tackle snaps in those cheetah packages, right? To kind of free Micah up on the edge. But yeah, I think that's why you saw a lot of him just bailing the pocket. Was Micah's getting pressure on the inside and he goes, oh. Okay, I'll just run out there. And we couldn't cover him. We could not cover him.
If you are going to do it, I mean, there's other options, right? Like maybe Enagbare, you know, basically is more taking like a, almost like an outside slant, like almost like a spy approach on the outside, or Baron Durrell, but I don't think it can be Gary, or you blitz off the right corner. There's other things you can do, but I would almost just prefer, like you said, that if that's what they're going to do again, keep Mike on that side of the field, make him roll left.
The last 2 weeks, too, they've been running a lot more sim pressures, which is like when you see Micah Parsons at the line of scrimmage and then bails out and he's in coverage with Kingsley and Egbare, right? Yep. Like that, those are sim pressures where you're still only sending four, but the bodies are different, right? You're sending a nickel and you're dropping Micah or whatever defensive lineman, right? They're doing that. And it's been pretty effective, but one thing that has hurt them in both games is they've gotten it timed up wrong, and the offense is called screens. And once you get like, oh, Micah is over the center, and he's supposed to be the hook defender, and he's supposed to take on a tunnel screen like X, right? And it's just really different when you start getting the screen game, and they probably haven't practiced that too much. So the playbook is opening up on the defensive side. but there are ways to beat it a little bit. And teams are seemingly figuring that out. I sent you that one clip of one of the few snaps that Nate Hobbs played, and it was Xavier McKinney down blitzing, and Nate Hobbs is like 20 yards off the line of scrimmage, basically playing safety. I mean, he's in the slot, but he's playing deep. And, you know, if your quarterback actually knows the personnel of the Packers defense and he's been studying all week, you should be able to figure that out and be like, oh, I should probably throw a screen right now. Right.
Yeah.
Like, if we can get into the screen, that would be nice to have in those type of situations. So
what did you think of the return of Nate Hobbs?
All right. I have the numbers up right now. So the first 15 plays of defense, Nate Hobbs was the only guy to play in the slot. That's weird. So if at the beginning, it felt like a benching of Bullard. And then they got all Bullard, except for two plays, probably early fourth quarter. I like that they're rotating those guys. I think I've said it to you and basically banged the table for this for the past couple months, but like, if you want to have Bullard playing all the nickel snaps until you get in the cheetah package, which is when what they're playing in obvious passing downs, and you want to play Hobbs in the slot in the cheetah package stuff, I'm totally cool with that. So that's kind of where I've been standing. Hobbs fit the run pretty well. Like, he was aggressive in this game and stuff too. So I'm not worried about, like, you know, physicality falling off or anything like that. So that's just kind of my thoughts in general.
I'm just going through right now. First snap, Hobbs is on. It's a 3rd-and-5 shotgun, obvious pass situation.
There were a lot of, so the third one that he was on was the only time that they weren't in cheetah in those first, whatever.
15. Yeah. Cause the next one is 3rd-and-15, obvious passing situation.
Yep.
And then I'm trying to see what the next one was. It was,
because that one was nickel.
Just so the next one was 2nd-and-15 shotgun, okay, situation, more obvious passing situation. So yeah, not a cheetah package, but a 2nd-and-15. Brettel and I were talking about this in the press box live of, like, it was really difficult to tell because the last game before Hobbs was injured, what they did was basically go, Bullard is kind of their base nickel guy, what I consider like base nickel, where it's like more anything could happen, run or pass. And then Hobbs was kind of like their obvious passing down nickel guy. And then it felt like that was what it was in this game. But early in this game, early downs were all base. So it was like a lot of 4-3 to begin with.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was obvious passing situation. So Hobbs was on. So like there was no like no man's land where it was either a early down nickel situation or a non-obvious nickel. Like it was always either 4-3 or Hobbs. And I think it was more just due to the circumstance of all of those passing like nickel situations were obvious passing downs. And then as soon as we got into some of those more interesting, more like kind of what I would say again is more base nickel, we saw Bullard play his usual snaps there.
Yeah, for sure. And then he also ended up playing some of the cheetah snaps down the stretch, which is why I was like, well, maybe, like, I don't know if they do it this way, but it would be like, if you're going to play the obvious passing downs by quarter, which, like, they've done the by quarter thing situationally at safety too, right?
The other thing worth noting too is obviously both of them were coming off of injuries. Like Bullard didn't practice the 2 days before. Hobbs was his first game back in what, like 3-4 weeks or whatever. So they easily could have wanted to keep both of those guys just around 25 snaps or whatever. So then neither of them had to play 40-50 snaps, and that could have easily played a factor in as well.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
I will say he didn't have much opportunity, but I thought for the most part, he looked more active. I thought he looked better in that game than what I've seen from him in the past. At least it was good sound football. It didn't have any major errors. There's the one crossing play. He couldn't do much about it. But other than that, I thought he looked better in this game than he had earlier in the season.
Yeah, and he's just always looked better in the slot anyway. I mean, he's had limited reps, but he's always looked better in the slot than at the outside. So
you mentioned him earlier, so I'll bring him up. Rashawn Gary, I saw your post of when we talked about it last couple weeks too, with the amount of pass rush snaps that he gets, his wins under 3 seconds. I think it's under three, right? Quick yep. wins. Yeah, under 3 seconds is brutally low, and it has really not changed at all.
No. I mean, yeah, it's not looking good, folks. So, like, he might just be someone who, like, needs a better home at this point. If the Packers are getting so much run and quick game and you have to stop quarterbacks scrambling on the outside, like, those aren't really ways that Rashawn wins. Like, he can set an edge, but then do you have to respect the edge if he sets it? Like, can he get off the block and still come off and make a tackle? Like, that's the math that these quarterbacks are starting to do on him, right? So I don't know how much value he has in this Parsons world, because, I mean, we've talked about it. Like, the defense has totally changed, where, you know, what you're seeing, what you're getting is totally different. Like, we need quick wins because the ball is coming out quickly. Like, that's just kind of the world that we're living in. I know I think Matt even said it in the presser today and was like, we're not getting a lot of passes because of our pass rush. And I'm like, it's not because of the pass rush. It's because of Micah Parsons. It's not the pass rush as a collective unit. It's Micah Parsons. It's that guy. So, yeah. No, but Micah has been worth everything.
Everything. Like, yep. And then some.
Opposing fans ask me every week, because, like, I do like the five questions for APC and stuff. And, you know, we have sister sites, so, like, we go back and forth, and one of the questions is always just like, so was the Micah Parsons trade worth it? Every week I'm like, dude, it's been it's everything I could have imagined. Very worth it.
100%. No questions. The question I don't know the answer to that I've been asked, and I am very split on it, and I'd be curious your thoughts. I know that we've got some time on this one. We don't need a decision today per se, but Rashawn Gary back in 2026, yes or no? If you had gun to your head, just prediction, not what you would do, prediction.
Yeah. I mean, I'd lean, yeah. I always kind of lean that the team is going to keep the guy.
Yep.
I think Dalton is just an open and shut case. That's the only reason why I'm out there on that. The thing, if they get rid of Gary, that's interesting, is like, what do you use the cap space on? And I know that sounds stupid, but, like, they're not going to want to hit free agency. We've talked about that. We've explained why, right? Like, the compensatory picks are very important. So do you just have a little bit of money that you can, like, roll out? I mean, I guess you're going to need money anyway, right? Because you could have – we've done the math. The Elton Jenkins release, the Quay Walker extension basically gets you to zero effective dollars, right, in cap space. Now you're adding another draft pick. That's going to take a little bit of money, but not a super significant amount. If you get rid of Gary, does that open the cap space for a Christian Watson extension, a Tucker Kraft extension, and you don't have to touch any of the money? And you don't have to add any dead cap in a 2027.
Right.
Right. And then that puts you in a more aggressive spot in 2027, where you can hit free agency. We can salary convert Jordan Love's contract. We can salary convert Micah Parsons' contract and all that stuff. And, you know, really go into free agency and really juice this thing before the decay really starts rapidly hitting. Like, I guess that's one way to do it, but I don't think fans see it that way. That's the problem, is the fans will go, wait, we got rid of Rashawn Gary and we didn't add anything? Gutterball. Like, Gutterball did it again. Getting owned. Like, yeah. So
very familiar. Yes. What if you just use it to re-sign a Kingsley Nagbare or a Sean Ryan or someone like that?
Yeah, that's fine too. Like, that, if you want to go that route, I'm totally cool with it. And Nagbare, I just don't know what the kid's market is going to be. Cause, like, he had trade suitors who are interested in him. And then, you know, we have young guys at defensive end too. Plus we're going to have to figure out what needs to happen with Lucas Van Ness. So, like, I think either way, like, Nagbare is a guy that he's going to have to hit free agency. And then you probably want to be like, yeah, just loop us back in when you get that contract and let us know what the number is. I think Ryan, you could be proactive about. I think Ryan, he's probably not going to want to do it before the season ends. But after the season, you could be like, you know, give him a contract extension. I'm totally cool with that. We've talked about the center market in the draft. There's not that many guys in this draft class, and the top guy has a torn ACL, right? So it's not a good position to be in. There's the highest drafted potential center is probably going to be Brian Parker, the tackle out of Duke, who's going to be a conversion type of guy. And he's an underclassman. So who knows if he's going to come out. And then Poncho from Green Bay is the other one, or Oregon is the other one. Sorry, I said Green Bay. My teams are green and yellow.
I'm with you. So I'm trying to look at like last year's, like who would potentially be something similar. Is Chauncey Golston in the same conversation of Kingsley Enagbare?
Kingsley?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I assume Kingsley, he's going to get somewhere between like 6 and 2.5, somewhere around. Like, it's not a crazy amount, I don't think. I don't think he's going to be a starter.
Golston got 3 for 18 last year. I could see
3 for 18. That's what, 6?
Yeah, 6 per year.
Yeah. I mean,
Anthony Nelson got 2 for 10. I think Enagbare is better than that. Michael Hoyt got 3 for 21. That's 7 mil per year. Patrick Jones is probably, that's probably an interesting comp. I bet I would put it more towards the Patrick Jones contract going, because he was a backup, up and coming edge rusher that was a backup in Minnesota, goes to Carolina, gets 2 years, 15 million. I bet that's closer to the comp for Enagbare. 2 years, 15. And a half?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. see, where it'll get interesting with Enagbare, if that's the number, it's like, okay, well, what's our plan with Van Ness?
I bet they fifth year option Van Ness would be my guess. They pick up the fifth year.
I think they're going to too. And it's going to drive people crazy. But
I just, if they did for Wyatt, I think they do it for LVN is basically my.
But they didn't for team captain Quay Walker. So
I'm less, this is totally just different conversation too, but I'm less convinced now with Quay a little bit. I don't know. There's certain ones you mentioned.
The more McDuffie plays, the more I am more convinced at Quay. I'm like, dude, we cannot play McDuffie at the mic. Like,
yeah,
it was what the real route this past week. Like, it's just not good, man. It's not good in coverage. I understand he can fit the run, but like, the team might be better if like Hopper was our third linebacker.
That's the other one I would go with is more Hopper, because I think he's ready too. But it's tough to say. Only they would know because we haven't seen enough of Hopper. But it's just I'm pretty dead set. Dobbs is gone. I'm pretty dead set. Elton Jenkins is gone. Yeah. I think I'm pretty dead set. Rashid Walker's gone. I'm more intrigued at Sean Ryan. I'm more intrigued at Enagbare. I'm more intrigued at Rashawn Gary. I'm still leaning that Quay Walker is back. But I'm the more time goes on, the more I'm intrigued at what happens with it. But I still think Quay is back. And then is there anybody I'm missing? I think those are kind of the main ones.
Not unless you want to talk about the RFAs.
Interesting conversations. Like Chris Brooks, Emmanuel Wilson, I think Bo Melton. Like I don't know that you actually offer.
Bo isn't somehow. Was corrected. Yeah. Bo's going to be an ERFA. Kennard might be the one who like we actually give him the tender. Right.
Yep.
It's like $3 million, and it's like
an offensive lineman. Sure. Yep.
Yeah. You're going to be our swing tackle. Cool. Especially if, you know, you're going in with the Jordan Morgan plan where people are like, well, you got to have a backup plan. Well, we've had Kennard in the building for 2 years. Right. So let's do that.
What did they give Andre Dillard when they brought him in?
I think he was pretty close to I would have guessed like $2 million or something like that.
Yeah. Something right around there. And if you're going to do that, it was only 1.125 million. So
that's probably
they got him closer to a vet min, but either way, it's at least more of an interesting conversation for Kennard. All right. The last thing I want to talk about before we get to Packers Broncos is I brought this up on Twitter the other day. It got some interesting conversation. I heard from some really cool people that are like, yep, I totally see it the same way. Heard from some fans who didn't see it the same way. Just based on, I looked at my grades, I looked at PFF grades, and then I said, screw the grades, doesn't matter. If I had to piece together right now, if everyone's healthy, which wide receivers are on the field for Green Bay? My number one is Christian Watson. My number two is Jaden Reed. My number three is Dontavian Wicks. My number four is Golden. My number five is Dobbs. My number six is Melton. My number seven is Savion Williams. Where would you agree? Where would you disagree? We'll be right back. Hey friends, today's show is brought to you by Prize Picks. It's the holiday season, the best time of the year for sports, because right now we have bowl games, marquee basketball matchups, playoff pushes, and it's all happening right now, all at once. And while you and I are out making decisions every single day, like which gifts to buy, what to get for dinner, which game to watch, there's only one place where it feels good to be right, and that's Prize Picks. And I love how simple Prize Picks is to use, and more importantly, how fun it is to play. This football season's been even more fun with Prize Picks, and getting my picks in for each slate of games has been a super fun part of my football experience. Oh, and guess what? Prize Picks has a brand new feature, early payouts. If your lineup gets off to a hot start, you may now have the option to cash out those winnings before the game even finishes. So join the millions of users and sign up for America's number one fantasy sports app. This week, I'm going with Jaden Reed against Denver as Green Bay tries to retain its hold on the number one seed in the NFC North. I'm also going to make some picks on Christian McCaffrey, Jalen Warren, and Derrick Henry. Now it's time for you to get in on the action as well. Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. So we all know a chef, a griller, a cooking hobbyist, or a stay-at-home parent who just enjoys making really good food for their family. I have a couple in my family and have seen them light up when they get that perfect ingredient, a piece of cookware, or a new grilling accessory as a present. I know because I love cooking and recently received some Omaha steaks, and I was beyond overjoyed. This holiday season, you can give the gift of USDA certified tender steaks, juicy burgers, cozy and convenient comfort meals, and so much more with Omaha Steaks. When I got my Omaha Steaks, I fired up the grill immediately, and I couldn't wait to taste the grass-fed, grain-finished steaks that showed incredible marbling. It was the perfect gift, and the flavor ended up being unbelievable. Now, Omaha Steaks delivers an exclusive lineup of USDA-certified tender steaks, and their fan-favorite filet mignons have achieved the distinction of USDA-certified very tender. And of course, they also carry mouth-watering burgers, chicken, pork, seafood, and delectable desserts. So right now, save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All The Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code PACKADAY at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com using code PACKADAY.
I think I might flip Golden and Dobbs is the only thing.
No.
Yeah, I mean, that would probably be it. I'm with you. I mean, the Dobbs stuff is just so, like, he's just such a weird receiver, man.
One of the weirdest.
We've talked the strong hands thing and, like, that being a narrative, right? It's not like he doesn't drop passes, but he does make tough ones. But, like, Christian makes tough ones now, which is great. I love that. Keep that going, Christian.
Please,
You're on a hell of a tear, dude. It's been awesome to watch you blow out the past, like, month or whatever. But, like, Dobbs has always been, like, this super inefficient receiver from, like, yards per route ran standpoint. Like, he's always out there. He's always the outside receiver. And he doesn't get as many targets as you would think. And then when he does get targets, he does drop the ball. So, like, he doesn't come down with a lot of yards for as much opportunities as he has out there. I mean, I'm with you, but they've had – here, I can pull it up right now. Outside receiver snaps. Christian Watson is second so far on this team with 208 outside receiver snaps this year. Jamal Dobbs has 541. Dontavian Wicks is third with 157. So, like Dobbs is lapping these guys in terms of how many opportunities he gets as an outside receiver.
It's remarkable. Like, this is just who Romeo is in his rookie year. He had the one outlier in 2023, but his rookie year, he got 67 targets, 42 catches, 425. That last year, 72 targets, 46 catches, 601. This year, 73 targets, 45 catches, 542. And I get, and like the first year was 3 touchdowns. Last year was 4 touchdowns. This year's 5 touchdowns. Like success rates right around the same. Last year it was 51% in 23, 59% in 24, 56% so far this year, along of 36, 39, 48. What is this one? Receptions per game, 3.2, 3.5, 3.5, 3.5. Yard per game, 32, 39, 46, 41. Catch percentage, 62%, 61%, 63%, 61%. Yards per target, 6.3, 7.0. The 8.3 was an outlier, 7.4. Just the same wide receiver every damn year.
Yep.
It's a fine, solid, average-ish wide receiver that's not going to do anything really spectacular. Might have a 7-catch, 120, one or two touchdown game every once in a while. But for the most part, it's going to basically be about, you know, 3 or 4 catches for about, you know, 40, 50 yards and a touchdown every once in a great while.
So, and I do think that that has value.
Yeah, right? For sure. Then I want to be very clear on that too. This is, people see me put Romeo as 5 and be like, oh, it's super disrespectful. It's not even disrespectful to Romeo at 5. It's just also what I feel about Wicks, Golden, Reed, and, yes, and Watson ahead of them.
So that's the point that I was going to make, is that guy has value, and that guy has more value the younger the receiver core is and the more, yes, inconsistent they are. When Wicks had his spurt through drops, when Watson had his spurt of drops, that guy is more valuable. But when those guys start rising and start developing and get further down their careers, that player then becomes less valuable, yep, to your offense, right? And I just think that that's where we are. The wide receiver rotation was kind of weird in this game. So Tavian Wicks actually starts this game. He's basically stops playing after like the first quarter. Matthew Golden was limited in this game reps wise, but they sprinkled him in throughout the game. Like, yep, when they needed speed on the field and it was a third and long, the guys that they were throwing out there was like three of these four receivers, right? It was Christian Watson, Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks, and Bo Melton, right? Yep. So, yeah, I mean, it seemed like Golden was at least healthy enough to go. They just didn't want to push it. Whereas Wicks, it was like after a certain point, they were just like, shut him down.
Yeah. I wonder if some of that too with Golden, because it was a wrist injury with his speed, if they ran him maybe on some dummy routes and are just like, all right, go fast and get down the field and take some guys with you where we know you're not going to get the ball anyway on this one. But yeah, who knows? Either way, hopefully those two are healthier this week. Savion Williams returned to practice on Wednesday as well, so that's a good sign. And either way, it's a really good problem to have, and I'm just interested to see how Green Bay kind of manages it if and when everyone gets healthy of what they kind of do the rest of the year.
Yeah. For sure. Especially now that we know Bo is kind of freed up because Kamal Haddon can kind of be the backup corner. Well, not even the backup corner anymore because Hobbs is back. So, yes. I mean, we're, 3 injuries away at cornerback from Bo Melton having to contribute on defense. So, you know, knock on wood, that stuff does happen, but hopefully it doesn't. Like, that kind of frees up Bo to be able to play offense too. So,
and I think really the point you were trying to get to Bo as a corner was, can he play it if we really need him? Like, can he go out there and, yeah, do it and add value? Like, to your point, now you've got Valentine, Nixon, Haddon, and Hobbs all ahead of him. And now you still have him there. If you need him in a break glass in case of emergency on the active 48, perfect. They got him to that point. And now if you need to use him more at receiver, you can. But if all of a sudden Wicks and Golden are both healthy and Savion Williams is back, I don't know how much you need Bo on offense anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, if everyone's healthy, we just need Bo for special teams. So
I told this story immediately following the game. We're watching the game, and we obviously at the time didn't know that Wicks or Golden were limited to the extent that they were because it was still early in the game. I go to Westendorf next to me, and I'm like, why the hell is Bo Melton, and I'm a big Bo Melton guy, like, why the hell is Bo Melton out here at wide receiver when you've got Golden, Wicks, Watson, Reed, Dobbs? Like, it doesn't make any sense that there's a still like plays that you need him for. Boom, 50-yard touchdown. Right as I said it. Just right as I absolutely said it. Why is Bo Melton out here? Why is it not one of the other guys? 50 whatever yard touchdown it was. So that was perfectly, yeah, perfectly well played.
I think it was, what was it, the Lions game? I was like, Gary's been stinking it up. And then he had like his best pass rush rep in like 2 months. And I was like, all right, I'll shut up for a bit.
Same thing with Quay last year. I said we even put a short out. I'm done with the Quay experience, and then had his best three games of the season immediately following it. Always got to love it.
Speaking of Hives, dude, Keyshawn Hive. We're so back, dude. We're so back. We did it. The payoff. We were down bad. It looked bad early.
It looked bad
early, but we came back, baby.
One of those calls was a garbage call, though. There's no way that PI or the not the PI, the 15-yard penalty should have been a thing.
I cannot imagine. Or I could not believe how many people were like, yes, if a man puts his hands around your throat, that's totally fine, and you just have to walk away. That is insane.
And here's the thing.
Do not teach your children that if they put their a man puts their hands around your neck, it's totally okay, and you just have to walk away. For the love of God.
Also, it's not like dude puts his hand around his neck and he winds up and punches him in the face. He's literally getting his arm off of him. He's literally just like, hey, can we not put your hand around my neck? And again, I'm sure words were spoken as well. But that was maybe the most egregious, unless I'm missing something. But like, you can see the angle on TV of its hand around his neck. Nixon moves his hand away and the flag immediately comes out at that point. Like, there's that angle of it. That's one of the more absurd personal foul penalties that I have seen. I can't even fathom. At very worst, you call it offsetting. At very worst. And if anything, should have probably just been 15 on Chicago on that play.
Yeah, and I know people are like, well, the second person is always the guy who gets caught. Sometimes you got to take the flag. I mean, if that's the scenario, sometimes you got to take the flag. But, like, Burton's going to lose his game check. So, and Keyshawn under the game. I love Keyshawn so much, man. He's a dog.
He is. Sorry, and
I just want, like a grimy West Coaster, dude. I'm sorry. I'm going to root for that guy forever.
He is, too. I think the funny thing is, like, you go through that, and, of course, it's, like, immediate catch. Because you have the illegal hands to the face, which is a bad play by him, like, no question. But, like, an illegal hands to the face penalty happens from time to time. It's not the end of the world. It's not like you gave up a 70-yard touchdown pass or something, right? And then you get the 15-yard penalty, which at the time, everyone thought that he did something worse. So it's like,
oh, my God. Before the replay, people were like, come on. And then everyone saw the replay. And then I feel like most people came to their senses and were like,
Then he gives up the touchdown, which he's in great coverage on. Like, phenomenal coverage. I don't know how, right?
Yeah. That was... Good. I don't know. I just don't even know what you can do, dude. PFF will hit him with that. I'm sure in the coach's room, they're just like, you were there. They made a play.
I think he went for the pick. I think if he goes for the batted down pass instead, I think he gets it batted down. But either way, he's in great coverage. It happens. It's an unbelievable play by Chicago. And then the rest of the game, he's got the play where he breaks up the pass behind the line of scrimmage. I can't remember if he had another pass breakup or not. We had good coverage the rest of the day. And then, of course, one of the plays of the season coming off of DJ Moore to go cover the wide open Cole Kmet that Evan Williams basically left in the back of the end zone to go and make a game-winning interception. You know Chicago's going for two, and you know Ben Johnson's going to have something creative pulled up in that situation for that exact spot. That's like potentially the difference between a win and a loss just on that play right there.
100%. Yeah. I mean, fourth and one. Yeah. I talked about this with Tex after the game, and he was really surprised about the sequencing of that last possession, because it's third and short. They run the ball. The clock now becomes a factor, and then it's fourth down. You got to have it. You could have been in a position on third and short where, you know, move the pocket, pass it. Worst thing that happens, you know, well, things could go worse, but plan for the thing that happens is being an incomplete stop clock. Clock is no longer a factor. And then you're, you know, open downs for the fourth and short. But yeah, that was weird. I just remembered a thing on defense that I wanted to talk about. The Packers are now doing this weird thing. There are so many teams that are playing with six offensive linemen that the Packers now have a defense that they play against specifically the six offensive line packages, and they get to 3-4 looks. They started doing this at the end of the Philadelphia Eagles game. I think we talked about that on the final drive of the Eagles game when they stuffed the runs and then forced Jalen Hurts to throw that weird pass on the fourth down where they definitely should not have gone for it, right? So the Packers are now running a 3-4 look. But this week they sprinkled it up and had Kingsley and Igbaria play as one of like the 3-4 defensive ends instead of the edge rushers. So it's a 3-4 look with three DNs, two D tackles, and then two off-ball linebackers. So that's how the Packers are handling it right now. I think if they had five defensive tackles up, they probably would have had five defensive tackles or three defensive tackles in on those 3-4 looks. But this was the first week in like what, a month, that they didn't have five defensive tackles up, which is another interesting thing with the whole just your Stackhouse stuff, right? Where it's you lost Devontae Wyatt and then you went from five actives to four actives. We'll see how that that goes down the line. I mean, maybe, dude, if they keep five and Nasir is not one of those five, that's a pretty bad sign.
Yes, very bad sign. I actually thought he's been playing a little bit better as of late too, better than he was early in the season, but they're going to have to, and Matt did say it's going to be a competitive situation week in and week out, that maybe they got a new toy in Jordan Riley and are like, let's see what he can do. Maybe he can be really good. And maybe they wanted to test it out, but I do think that'll probably be competitive for the time being and interested to see what Bohanna can bring to the table as well. Really quick shout out to Kingsley Amari for that play on third down to stuff the run at the line of scrimmage to force them into that fourth and one. That's another sort of unsung moment right before the Keyshawn pick where, Enigbari stuffs him, absolutely stuffs him on that play. That was a huge, huge play in the game.
Yeah, that the Kingsley had a sack too, right? And then the Carl Brooks little, they try to do the little tricky-dicky play, and Carl Brooks just blows it up in the backfield, gets there before a pulling guard. That was really fun.
I've seen a lot of fun drawn-up plays. That one confused the hell out of me. Because the receiver is coming inside of the play. That just feels like it's got risk written all the hell over it. That was a really weirdly designed play. And I have to think, it was to DJ Moore, right? Because he lost 4 yards on the play. That was his only catch of the day. And I can only imagine DJ Moore's like, I finally get a catch and like I'm running perpendicular to, and like Carl Brooks is just chilling there and just annihilates him.
Yeah.
It's like, thanks for that catch, guys.
I think teams like that because if you blow it up, it's not a fumble. It's an incomplete pass. For sure. Yeah. So yeah. But no, I mean, I think outside of the defensive tackles wearing down because you can't get off the field, which I know is a giant caveat, the defense played pretty good.
Yes, they did.
We're good at tackling, which kind of hurts us to a certain extent, because if we're stopping you for four, we're just never getting off the field, right?
Yes. It's why I've talked about in the past with this defense of like, I almost want to see Halfley be a little bit more aggressive on first down to try to get some of those negative plays to get in the second and longs rather than be a little bit more concerned. Because if you give up the first, if you give up an 11-yard play, just start it over. First and 10, cool. Let's see if we can get them into a negative again. Yeah. All of a sudden it's second and five and then third and one, and then first and 10 and second and six and third and two and first and 10. And it's just like, you're just going around in a wheel over and over and over. And I get the idea is to eventually have them screw something up, but it hasn't always worked that way this year. And you're eating up a lot of clock, getting your defense very tired. Your offense is out of rhythm. Then they go three and out, and then you're in problems. And even when they scored,
it spirals because it's always the long drive, the three and out, and then the long drive. And it's just like, we're not going to be able to stop anyone for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
Like we're done. Our energy bars are at zero. We're depleted. I mean, the second half snaps had to be crazy.
It was
like, it had to be like 15 to like 40 or something.
Yeah, I remember because I was looking at it because I keep a very close eye on how many great plays I'm going to have to grade throughout the course of a game. And I remember being like, oh, I'm going to grade a lot of offense. I'm like, oh, nope, they didn't play offense in the second half of this game, basically. Because they went three plays, three and out, four plays touchdown on the deep ball, and then three and out again right after that. They had three drives that it was a total of 10 plays. And that one drive alone for Chicago was 17 plays. So, yeah, it was quite the discrepancy. Now that we're hungry, Justice, let's talk some Packers Broncos. What are your keys to this one? What are you looking out for?
So I watched some Broncos tape this morning. Bo Nix is exactly who I remember Bo Nix was. And we should be able to take advantage of this guy, man. We really should. Especially with all the disguise stuff that Halfley has now introduced, where we talked about like the sim pressures and stuff like that. He's not doing great at being able to process all that information. Yep. I feel pretty good about being able to stop this offense as long as they don't just lean into the run the entire time, which they're probably going to do because that's what teams do against us. I think this will probably be a sloppy game. By the hype on the Broncos defense, like they are that good. I could totally see this game just being like a couple of possessions and looking like maybe like the Eagles game, maybe like the Panthers game. Like I don't think it's going to be a real, like super fun watch. I don't think that there's going to be fireworks on the, long touchdowns and stuff like we had in this game. It's going to be a lot grittier. I'm hoping the offensive line comes to play. Josh Jacobs, I take the entire week off of practice if you need it, dude. I'm going to need you on Sunday.
Same. Yeah, there's two specific matchups, Nick Benito versus Rashid Walker and Belton versus Allen are the two that I would be most concerned about in this one. But yeah, that Denver defense is really freaking good. Hufanga has been fantastic as a safety. And then obviously Sertan, Greenlaw is having a resurgence in Denver since coming back from the injury. It's just a really, really good defense. And to your point, that offensive line is going to have to come into play.
Riley Moss isn't bad either.
They've got a lot.
Like he'll make a play on a ball. So yeah. Jordan, please protect the ball. We're going like the Steelers game plan, right? Don't protect the ball. Let's throw a lot of stuff underneath. Like, even if we can't get yak, just like chip away 5 yard gains. Like, do not take a deep shot this week. That's what I'm expecting out of this one for sure. And then defensively, you're just like, look, the longer Bo Nix is on the field, just the more opportunities he has to give us the football in some way or take a sack or do something dumb.
Mike is due for a sack fumble sort of play. This defense, Xavier McKinney is due for an interception. Like they're just, this is going to be the week. They get a couple of those this week. And I think that swings it one way or the other. In general, are you buying the Broncos? I guess, where are you at? Are they, I wouldn't put them as like a contender, but they've won 10 in a row. Well,
they can win any individual game. Yeah. Can they string together 4 wins to get Bo Nix a Super Bowl trophy? No.
I'm with you.
Yeah. Like he's never going to be a quarterback who gets hot. Like that's not like, I can see Jordan going on like a tear some postseason and just like, you're like, what? He had 13 touchdowns, 0 interception, was averaging like 9 a pass. That's insane.
Yep.
Bo Nix is never going to be that guy.
Correct.
Never. Yeah.
Hashtag extend Toyotathon through February, please. So we kind of talked about this being a really good defense for Denver, taking care of the football. Offensive line needs to come to play. Any other sort of keys to this game for Green Bay on how they can go about winning this one? Maybe before we go there, I did see your article that the official in this game is very Homer friendly, which is not great.
Yeah. So contrary to popular belief, home teams actually get flagged way more, more than away teams. And Brad Rogers, who's going to call this game, is the opposite. He had us for the Green Bay Washington game, but since then he's calling like his crew is calling like 50% more flags on the away team than the home team this year, which is not great if you're a Packers fan. Another not great thing. We're wearing the all whites again. A third time.
Yeah.
Why are we doing this?
I am not jersey guy. I don't care about jerseys. What's their record in all whites so far this year? Have they lost both? Or I don't know what games did they wear all white for?
I don't remember. I think they did it for Washington, right? So they won that one.
Won that one. I can look it up.
I can't. I don't remember the second game. I think it was another night game for some reason. I can't remember what the other night game was.
Was it Steelers? Been. Steelers?
Maybe. Yeah. Yes. Yes, because we didn't wear the yellow helmets. Or, yeah, we didn't wear the yellow helmets.
2-0. We're 2-0 in all whites. Go with the all whites. I'm fine with it.
All right. I don't like it.
I don't care.
I don't like it.
I've said for the longest time, keep the primary homes the primary homes. Keep the primary ways the primary aways. If like 2 to 3 other games per year, you want to do whatever fun you want to do so you can sell jerseys in the pro shop and make some money or do whatever. If you want to put it for like, if you want to go all pinks, what I don't care, Justice. Just go out and win football games and just keep the main ones the main ones the vast majority of the time. The rest I can overlook and I'm cool with.
I need the yellow helmets. It doesn't look right. I need the yellow helmets.
I'm mostly with you on it. I honestly, if they just had always their the regular homes and always the regular aways, I would be totally 1,000,000% fine with that. We'll be right back. Hey friends, we've all gone through difficult times, whether it be with addiction, heartbreak, financial troubles, or hundreds of other challenging situations that get presented to us on a day-to-day basis. I know I certainly have, and if you have, just know you're not alone. And the thing is, taking care of your mental health shouldn't be harder than taking care of your physical health. If you pull a muscle, you go see a doctor. But when it comes to finding the right therapist, suddenly it's frustrating. You've got long wait lists or you're staring down huge out-of-pocket costs. That's what usually stops people from getting help. That's where Rula comes in. Rula makes therapy simple, affordable, and fast. They work with most major insurance plans, and the average session copay is just $15. Just 15 bucks. Every therapist on the platform is licensed, vetted, and picked for their expertise, so you know you're going to talk to somebody legit, not just whoever happens to be available. And getting started could not be easier. You answer a few quick questions about what matters to you, and Rula connects you with in-network providers who actually fit your needs. You pick the time, and you could be talking to a therapist as soon as the next day. I can't stress enough how much therapy has been a blessing in my life, and it can be in yours as well. And Rula gives you that opportunity without having to break the bank. Now, thousands of guys have already used Rula to finally get the care they've needed. So don't keep putting it off. Go to Rula.com/Packaday and get started today. That's RULA.com/Packaday. Take the first step, get connected, and take control of your mental health. Guys, it's 2025. The days of going to the doctor for emergencies are over. No more waiting until walking it off for 6 months doesn't work, or your fingers are numb from texting, "I'm fine." It's time to take our health more seriously and get things checked out when we need to. That's where ZocDoc comes in. ZocDoc makes it easier than ever by helping to find the right doctor quickly and easily. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high-quality, in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. You can filter for doctors who take your insurance, are located nearby, and are highly rated by verified patients. Appointments made through ZocDoc happen fast, typically within just 24 to 72 hours of booking, and more often than not, you can even get same-day appointments. I've already had family members who have used ZocDoc and loved it, and I'll absolutely be utilizing it on all my appointments from here on out. So stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/Packaday to find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/Packaday. Again, ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/Packaday. Well, let me. I want to just go back one other thing for Packers. Well, two other things really quick for Packers Broncos before we get out of here. You kind of made a little bit of mention of this earlier, but if you're Matt, how are you building this offense to begin this game? Because you are going to a really tough Denver defense. You don't want to get in third and longs. This Packers offense seemingly is better when they are sort of attacking down the field. And when they sort of get a little bit more conservative, I like the games against Carolina, Philly, maybe where they haven't done quite as well. So how do you want to build this offense early and maybe test things out before maybe you have to course correct?
I'm trying to protect the ball. I'm trying to hold the football. Just knowing the status of the defensive tackles, I'm trying to run it. I'm trying to run yak and auxiliary stuff with Wicks and Reed and Golden, depending on, you know, who's up for that game and is going to be, you know, a full share of snaps. But yeah, I'm just trying to chip away and I'm trying to get 5-6 yard gains consistently. And, you know, we don't have to get it all in one bunch. You're just, that's not a way that it's going to work against this Broncos team. So it's going to be a low position game. execution is going to be everything. If you can execute, you know, that puts the brunt of the pressure on Bo Nix, which is, I think, how you want to win this football game. It's just, man, if we one turnover turns into two, turns into three pretty quick with a quarterback like that.
Yeah. All right, my last one. How far can Daniel Whalen punt a football at altitude?
I might go out of the stadium. And it's not going to be cold either.
No,
it's going to be, it's going to be like 60 degrees. So, yeah, have a time.
Brandon McManus revenge game, Daniel Whalen punting a football in altitude. Sign me up for special teams in this one. What could go wrong? But
Wilson revenge game.
Who was
Emmanuel Wilson revenge game?
I think he was a Bronco for a cup of coffee.
Yeah. I think he was a tryout player for the Broncos.
Okay.
Is how it ended up working out.
Interesting. I did not know that. Yeah. Denver Broncos 2023. Yeah. After going unselected, Wilson signed as an undrafted free agent with the Broncos. The Broncos waived him 3 days later. So Emmanuel Wilson revenge game. I'm in. Hopefully not. We didn't talk too much. Obviously, I'm sure everyone knows by now that you're listening to this on Thursday, but Josh Jacobs did not practice on Wednesday and he was on the exercise bike. We don't, as of recording this, we're recording this at about 3 p.m. on Wednesday. And obviously Matt LaFleur already spoke, so we're not going to find anything out until Thursday anyway, unless we get a report from one of the beat guys or a you know, national guy. But it could be rest, could be minor, could be something more. We don't know at this point, but obviously Josh Jacobs' health is going to be pretty paramount to this game as well.
Yeah, I just assume. Man, it's a running back, and we're in mid-December at this point. That body is taking punishment. So,
and we know Josh Jacobs wants to play. Yeah.
So,
but if not, I guess it could be an Emmanuel Wilson revenge game. Final thoughts, Joe?
Lloyd doesn't have to be up this week, right? That's next week?
Who? Yeah, no, we have another week after this week for Lloyd, Oliver, and Brenton Cox.
Yeah, because they have to make a decision whether to shut them down for the rest of the year or bring them up. So.
And last week, remember, at the final designations, Lloyd and Oliver were just out. Like, there was no chance of them playing. They weren't questionable. They were flat out. Brenton Cox was the one who was questionable. So it would just, I mean, based off of that alone, I would hypothesize that Cox is maybe the one that's closer to being healthy and coming back, but I don't know that they necessarily have the roster spot for him right now immediately anyway.
Yeah, especially if LVN is trending north.
And Cox doesn't play special teams. So
right,
those are all going to be very three interesting decisions. I don't even know which one I would say, but I bet one of the three gets activated and I bet the other two do not. I bet Oliver doesn't get activated for sure.
Yeah.
And then I think it's a coin flip between Cox and Lloyd. I bet they'd love Lloyd, but it's just such a weird situation.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to want to get him on the field. They're going to want him. One game we'll in see. 2 years.
It's a rough situation, especially with, we didn't talk about those, but Emmanuel Wilson, Chris Brooks, both being restricted free agents. And I don't think either of them get that tender. I don't think either of them get
it. But I think Brooks is going to be a guy who can come back for cheap. Whereas like Wilson,
John Fitzpatrick sort of situation.
Yeah. You
let him test the market, then bring him back for 1 year, $1.2 million with a 300 signing bonus or something like that.
Right. Because like Wilson might be chasing opportunities for like carries or something. Yep. But I think Brooks, it's like, we're all aware of what you are, right? Like we really like you as a blocking back and as a special teams contributor on like the kickoff return unit and stuff like that. Like
give me Jacobs, Brooks, Lloyd, a sixth round pick and an undrafted free agent. And I'm good to go. I can work just fine with that.
Yep.
Justice, I got nothing else for you. Anything else you want to get off your chest before we get out of here?
Not that I can think of.
Whoa. Phillip Rivers.
He's not playing this weekend, right? There's no way. There's no way, dude.
I bet he plays this weekend. I bet he plays. They don't bring Phillip Rivers in to not play. Like when you bring in Phillip Rivers, he's playing. Like I just, until I see otherwise, I believe he's playing.
That week.
You're not doing this for the Colts. You're doing this for America. You're screwed in Indianapolis no matter what. Like give us Phillip Rivers, give us something interesting to look at. I'm all the way in on this. I don't care what happens. It's just interesting.
Phillip Rivers graduated high school his last high school season was 1999.
Do you see he played like his, he played with Jerry Rice, Tim Brown. Like there was, he's a grandpa. That just some of the stuff is incredible.
There's, I fear for his life.
It's not like he's going against bad defenses either. He's
no, it's like a crazy slate.
Seahawks coming up this week, if he plays this week, which is like the one of the worst teams that you could come back and face. Yeah. He's got the Texans in the last week of the season. Jacksonville's been playing very good defense. And
the easy one is the Niners. The easy one is Robert Saleh. It's Robert Saleh's
defense, which you know is going to be going nuclear against them. So,
dude, yeah. I fear for his life.
Good luck.
At least he doesn't like, you know, he spread his seed pretty famously. Right? Yes. Like he doesn't have to worry about the lineage. So I guess like if he dies on a football field, I'm sure his family will get a pretty big check, but good God, man. He's up for the Hall of Fame right now. That's crazy.
He was.
Is this going to derail his Hall of Fame?
Yes, it does. It sets it. The one thing I don't know is if just signing to the practice squad resets it. So like if he doesn't play and he just signed to the practice squad and never gets to the active, I don't know if that resets it, but as soon as he gets in a game or to the active roster, then for sure it's over. It resets the clock.
You know what's crazy about this too? So the deadline when, who was it? It was the Lions guy, Ragnow. Ragnow unretired. That was the deadline. So Rivers must not officially be
retired.
But he did do the one-day retirement signing thing with the
Chargers. He must have never filed papers.
Yeah.
Or the NFL was just like, we're going to turn the other way because we want Philip Rivers to start for the Colts.
So, yeah, I need a full list of who is or isn't retired at this point. Like, Seawood, I know he's got the grays, but if we a couple slot reps, like, maybe.
Listen, just get rid of that stupid rule. There's no advantage to having that stupid rule. Like what's the point of like, if Frank Ragnow wants to come back in week 18, I don't care. Let him come back in week 18. Why is there a stupid rule that like such and such player can't come back?
I need to know
if Aaron Donald is retired. I need to know if Aaron Donald is retired or not. Cause that's the scariest one. But all of a sudden like Aaron Donald, by the way, like Aaron Donald's coming back for the playoffs this year. That's insane. Like I would be freaking out.
Yeah, screw. Yeah, we file a
grievance,
class action lawsuit.
Yes,
for that. That's not fair. I just that stuff is so weird, man. That stuff is so weird.
Yeah, they got to just figure that out. But I'm all in. I'm
the only time I can remember it mattering was like, didn't like Devin Hester retire, and then he like unretired right before the playoffs. He signed like 2 weeks before the playoffs with I think the Seahawks. And then he didn't end up doing anything because I think they got knocked out.
No recollection of this whatsoever.
Yeah. That's the only time I can remember something like that happening. But a punt returner is very different than a NFL quarterback.
I didn't realize Hester played for four teams. Can you name the four?
Chicago, Atlanta, Seattle.
AFC. I don't know.
AFC. God, it wasn't in the North.
2016.
It wasn't in the South. I don't know.
Baltimore Ravens.
Okay. I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, he actually played in 12 games too. Must have just been a return. He had five. All his stat line is, I'm not going to dig into this any deep because this is amazing. His whole stat line on Pro Football Reference is 34 years old, Baltimore NFL wide receiver, 12 games. It's all zeros, and there's 1-5, and it's fumbles. That's all it is. It's all zeros and 5 fumbles, which is one of the coolest stat lines I've ever seen in my life. So 12 games, no stats, 5 fumbles. So it must have just been returning.
Yep.
Somehow fumbled 5 times. All right, Justice, I will now let you free for good, or at least for today. Follow you at JUMOSQ, acmepackingcompany.com. Anything else we want to plug on the way out?
Join the site. Come talk football with us. I'm in the comment section throughout the week. Indiana football, Big Ten champs. Couldn't believe it.
Crazy. Wisconsin? Why couldn't it have been Wisconsin? If Indiana can do it.
You guys got a Mark Cuban?
Because why?
Do you guys have Mark Cuban?
He's a Indiana donor.
Oh, big
is that how this whole thing has happened?
I have a buddy who's a college football reporter. He wanted to do a story about Indiana football. This was probably around the Oregon game. And was told he went to the SID, sports information director, and was like, "Hey, I would like to talk to Mark Cuban about Indiana football and what he's contributed to the program." And they told him he will drop anything to talk about Indiana football right now. I'll give you his email. If you make the subject line Indiana football, he's going to respond to it. He sent the email 5 minutes later. Mark Cuban sent, you know, all his contact information and stuff. It was like, I'd love to talk about it. So yeah, Mark Cuban cares about Indiana a whole lot. I was told Wisconsin is going to pump up the money in this program, and that's why they're keeping around Luke Fickell. And then I looked at their recruiting class and was like, okay, so portal, I guess. We'll see. I don't know what, like, I think you could just say we're going to start investing more money and then not invest more money and no one.
You're just going to invest more money into Luke Fickell is what we're going to do. That I think that's the,
I guess, play bay.
But I can't do it. I can't do it with college football, but I don't know. Maybe if they can actually put a
Sco Ducks team together again. JMU this week, I was unprepared for how good the JMU posters are online. We have new friends. Oregon has met new friends. Like, Tennessee, we had a home and home with Tennessee, and we're friends forever over that. JMU is getting close to friends forever status, and we haven't even kicked off this game. Like,
were you guys three touchdown favorites?
Oh, it's got to be something crazy. So I learned, Tex brought this up. I learned the Oregon JMU game is going to be going on at the same time as Packers Bears.
Oh,
and I probably will not be watching the JMU game at all.
Yeah, you shouldn't need to, is I think the,
yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, I'll DVR it, but yeah, not preparing to spend a lot of mental energy there. The one thing that does suck, Andy, if I can complain, the kickoff for the second round game, it's going to be Texas Tech Oregon, which is probably going to be the only like real big second round game, because everyone expects Indiana, Georgia, Ohio State to win against whoever advances, right?
Yep.
Texas Tech, Oregon, 9 a.m. kickoff Pacific time at the Orange Bowl, New Year's Day.
Ooh.
Brutal. Brutal for me.
That is brutal.
Brutal for me.
Do you want to guess the line for Oregon, James Madison?
What you said, like 22 and a half?
I think I said 18. I think I said like it was something like three touchdowns, or that was my guess. But do you want to
give
guess
me 21 it? And a half?
Nailed it spot on. 21 and a half exactly.
Yeah, three touchdowns. Yeah. 22 yep. would have been weird. Yeah.
All right. Before we get off on another random tangent, which we could probably do for another hour, I'm getting you out of here at JUMOSQ at Andy Herman NFL. That's going to do it for us. Until next time. And as always, go Pack, go.